The Extraordinary Adventures of Arsène Lupin, Gentleman Burglar. By Maurice Leblanc. Narrated by Paul Spera. Sound by Patrick Martinez-Bourna. Thérèse and Germaine. The weather was so mild that autumn that, on the 12th of October, in the morning, several families still lingering in their villas at Etretat had gone down to the beach. The sea, lying between the cliffs and the clouds on the horizon, might have suggested a mountain lake slumbering in the hollow of the enclosing rocks, were it not for that crispness in the air and those pale, soft, and indefinite colors in the sky which give a special charm to certain days in Normandy. "It's delicious," murmured Hortense. But the next moment she added, "All the same, we did not come here to enjoy the spectacle of nature, or to wonder whether that huge stone needle on our left was really at one time the home of Arsène Lupin." "We came here," said Prince Rénine, "because of the conversation that I overheard a fortnight ago in a dining car between a man and a woman." "A conversation of which I was unable to catch a single word." "If those two people could have guessed for an instant that it was possible to hear a single word of what they were saying, they would not have spoken, for their conversation was one of extraordinary gravity and importance. But I have very sharp ears, and though I could not follow every sentence, I insist that we may be certain of two things. First, that man and woman, who are brother and sister, have an appointment at 11:45 this morning, the 12th of October, at the spot known as the Trois Mathildes, with a third person, who is married and who wishes at all costs to recover his or her liberty. Secondly, this appointment, at which they will come to a final agreement, is to be followed this evening by a walk along the cliffs, when the third person will bring with him or her the man or woman, I can't definitely say which, whom they want to get rid of. That is the gist of the whole thing. As I know a spot called the Trois Mathildes some way above Etretat, and as this is not an everyday name, we came down yesterday to thwart the plan of these objectionable persons." "What plan?" asked Hortense. "For after all, it's only your assumption that there's to be a victim, and that the victim is to be flung off the top of the cliffs. You yourself told me you heard no allusion to a possible murder." "That is so. But I heard some very plain words relating to the marriage of the brother or the sister with the wife or the husband of the third person, which implies the need for a crime." They were sitting on the terrace of the casino, facing the stairs which run down to the beach. They therefore overlooked the few privately owned cabins on the shingle, where a party of four men were playing bridge, while a group of ladies sat talking and knitting. A short distance away, and nearer to the sea, was another cabin, standing by itself, and closed. Half a dozen bare-legged children were paddling in the water. "No," said Hortense, "all this autumnal sweetness and charm fails to attract me. I have so much faith in all your theories that I can't help thinking, in spite of everything, of this dreadful problem. Which of those people yonder is threatened? Death has already selected its victim. Who is it? Is it that young, fair-haired woman, rocking herself and laughing? Is it that tall man over there, smoking his cigar? And which of them has the thought of murder hidden in his heart? All the people we see are quietly enjoying themselves, yet death is prowling among them." "Capital," said Rénine. "You too are becoming enthusiastic. What did I tell you? The whole of life's an adventure, and nothing but adventure is worthwhile. At the first breath of coming events, there you are, quivering in every..."